Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. 12 after. 800-531-3815. Toll-free coast-to-coast. Joan Pride is our guest. And it's good to have her back. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
It seems like 2 weeks since we talked.
Well, it
has been. Bum. It just seems like it's been so long. 2 whole weeks.
In a while.
Yeah. I've been having withdrawal symptoms. I just wanted to talk to you so bad.
Well, thank you.
Joan, let's get right into the letter and talk about natural gas. We've been getting a little bit of news about that, and it's not good news, is it?
Boy, it's terrible news. And I just don't understand why we can't plan better for these things, but apparently we can't. We're saying natural gas will be expensive for years to come.
Wow.
There's a squeeze on, and it's not ending anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem? Where are we stuck?
Gosh, well, you name it, and we're stuck there. It just, it's going to be a real difficult problem to get out of just because we have relied so much on natural gas to try to get, end our reliance on oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also electricity, because we haven't been producing a lot more electrical generators.
Right.
And so we've done that. And also, you guys point out, here's another thing that's exacerbating the problem, folks, is that the U.S. demand for gas between now and 2010 is going to go up by a third.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, we lived in a house with an oil burner.
Yeah.
And as I grew up and grew older, I noticed houses, more and more houses were operating on gas, and that was the new thing. Oh, oil is old way. You have to have a house that operates on gas, and that's mm-hmm. what they're building now,
mm-hmm.
unless you build an all-electric house.
Right. Somewhere in here, Joan, I saw what the percentage of our dependence upon other countries for oil. I've lost that somehow. I've forgotten what the number is.
We'll find it in a minute.
But anyway, but we are becoming more and more dependent upon this. And the problem with natural gas, of course, is transporting, right?
Exactly.
You can load liquid fuel onto a tanker and take it across the pond, but
you need a pipeline.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of sources of natural gas. It's not like we're going to run out. It's just a matter of getting them to where they need to be.
Russia has a lot of natural gas, doesn't it?
Yes, and so much of it on tap, sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example.
Yeah, that's a good place we can go. So we need to play nice with the Russians for that reason, don't we?
Right,
yeah.
We do.
But you guys remind us that that prices are going to spike periodically, and especially during the colder weathers, And it's going to have an impact on the economy. You guys are and basically it's like a tax as it goes up. It's a tax on everybody, on businesses and individuals as well, isn't it?
Right, and we're saying it's going to make a half a point difference in GDP next year, which to me is a pretty big amount.
That is just from one commodity.
Right.
That's the main thing. I mean, what other single commodity other than energy, gasoline or I should say crude or natural gas could make that kind of a spike? I mean, potatoes couldn't do that, right?
No.
or beef or cotton or your favorite, diamonds. I mean,
right. It's somewhat ironic given that, you know, we just liberated Iraq and we're thrilled that those oil fields are going to be more available now. And OPEC seems to have simmered down. It's losing some of its grip. But the problem really isn't so much with oil now. It's with natural gas.
Because you got to get it there, and
yeah.
I don't know if there's any way to transport other than pipeline. There isn't, is there?
I don't think so.
You can't beam it anywhere. You can't make it go over the internet.
Right.
But there are industries out there, and you know this is right at the wrong time, especially for American manufacturers. You know, here we are trying to get our economy going again, and get capital spending going again, and the dollar is weakening to help manufacturers export, and then we got industries, as you guys point out, like the fertilizer industry, plastics, paper, automobiles, et cetera, food processing too, that those people are going to be hit pretty hard by this.
Yes.
Because they use a lot of natural gas, don't they?
That's a big problem.
So, you know, the interesting thing is, Joan, is as people are looking out there at targets of opportunity to acquire, or maybe if you're an investor and you're looking for companies to, you know, to invest in, to buy their stock, one of the questions, Joan, I guess that has to be asked now is, how much does this company rely on natural gas, and what are their flexibility options that they have?
Exactly. You're going to have to do your homework.
Yeah, no question about that. It's going to hit consumers, too. I've got one of my properties has got natural gas, and actually two, and one of them doesn't. And so, you know, it's going to affect us, because whatever goes up for businesses, natural gas is going to go up for us, too.
Absolutely right.
But there's some conservation moves out there, aren't there, that people are working on?
Well, and the sooner that you can start employing some of these, the better. And we're saying that the Energy Department is a good source of information and can be very helpful in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I've seen a lot of companies do, a lot of industries do, is if they're smart, and some of them have been doing this for a number of years, Joan, they actually, if they're using, you know, fire, if they're using heat to boil things or to melt things or whatever they're doing,
mm-hmm.
they actually have redundant systems. They have they have electricity and they have natural gas side by side, and they literally know what their return on investment, the best return on investment is for their fuel, their energy usage. And in any given day or week or month, they'll change over from one to the other.
So they can just switch back and forth mm-hmm. whenever they need to.
At the moment, wow. that electricity is cheaper for per BTU than natural gas is, they just flip the switch. Now,
wow.
I'm oversimplifying it just because we only have a one-hour show here. and, of course, I know that makes it sound like I know more than I'm telling you, folks. But
sure
I really
does.
I really don't know much more, but I do know that they have that ability to do that. And the smart companies... That's where they're investing their money, I think, right now. Don't you, though, Joan?
Oh, I would think that would be the way to go, sure.
Another thing is that as natural gas prices go up, the demand for some of these alternative fuels, like switchgrass and other fuels, is becoming more interesting.
That's going to be very important, alternative fuels.
Well, wood chips and wood pulp and different things... I know a lot of people are working with switchgrass and other things as fuels, but they're not profitable right now because they're not really well developed and because the other fuels have been pretty economical.
Right.
Quick break, 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about energy right now. We started out talking about natural gas, and that's what got us talking about this, because natural gas prices, folks, as you know, is up. The price for natural gas is up, and it's going to stay up, it seems, according to Kiplinger, for a number of years, and I agree with you. I mean, it's just not like you just can't blink your eyes and solve this problem, Joan, because there's so much infrastructure that has to be laid and approved and then laid and usually it goes across some little bunnies or some little reindeer's lands, and you got the greenies out there saying, you know, no pipelines across the little bunnies warren here, and so. I mean, I like bunnies as much as the next person, but I also don't want to pay too much for natural gas.
Well, that's true, and then that, of course, is the problem.
Yeah. By the way, Joan, reindeer is excellent food.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had reindeer
you
in Sweden.
You probably think bunnies are, too.
I had reindeer three times in Sweden. It's wonderful. It's great. It's great food.
It's like chicken, right?
No, it's actually better than chicken. It's almost like filet mignon.
Wow.
Okay. Let's move on down and talk about, you mentioned the Energy Department a minute ago. Folks, there's a website that we have here, but I'm not going to give it to you because you're never going to remember this website, and you're not going to write it down. But go to the Energy Department's website. That's DOE.gov, www.DOE, Department of Energy.gov. and you can find out some more information about this, about how to get free audits, right, Joan?
That's right. That's really important. Free audits of plants, warehouses, and offices, so you can find out, you know, where your problems are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that you can upgrade your lighting. This is another way to save energy, is by upgrading your lighting system. I'm not sure if they're still doing it. I think it's called Green Light, Joan. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
There's a program called Green Light, I think is the term. I'm not sure if they're doing it, but they used to be companies that would come into your building, like if you had a high-rise building or a factory or something like that. They come into your building and evaluate. And I think I'm saying this right, folks. I'm not an expert on this at all. But they would come into your plant or your building and look at your equipment and look at your utility bills, and they would say, okay, if you upgraded to this new lighting, and they're selling lighting fixtures, by the way, and bulbs, and if you upgrade, it would take you 3 years or 5 years or whatever. The electricity savings would be enough to pay for the upgrade over the next 3 years or 2.5 years or whatever. Then after that, it's yours. Whatever's left is yours. And I don't know what the numbers are. I don't remember the years of payback, the return on investment. But I think it was called the Green Light Program. That's something people might want to look into if you've got a lot of fixtures out there, a lot of inefficient old ballasts. You might be able to save money that way and upgrade your equipment. And, of course, as you know, Joan, that makes the property more valuable when you do that.
No question about it, sure.
Let's move over and talk about the states, Joan, and the tax bills that they're going to have. Not the states, I should say. The Congress is tackling some new tax bills, you guys say, over the next couple of years. So the good news is we're going to have a new tax bill every year. Is that right?
Oh, more than one. We'll have a whole bunch.
All right.
I think a lot of people may think that the big tax cut we had was sort of the end, but there's plenty more to come this year and or next year.
Joan?
Yes?
From your mouth to God's ears.
Oh. Well, these won't be as broad and as sweeping. You know, they'll take little bites of the apple here and there.
Well, as I've said before, you folks, we might not like the numbers, but we've got to like the trend. That's right. So the federal government is cutting taxes, but the states aren't doing that, are they, Joan?
Oh, boy, the states. Well, that's one of the problems is almost every state piggybacks on the federal income tax system. So when the federal government cuts income taxes, the states find their income tax revenue cut automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem here is that most of the states have a lot of red ink to deal with and are in a lot of financial difficulty. So this comes at the worst possible time.
For some of these states, Joan, to say they are in a lot of financial difficulty is an extreme understatement.
Yes, that's
some
true.
Some of them may be like near bankruptcy.
Right.
And of course, you know, one of the things they want to do when they get in trouble is go talk to Big Daddy. They want to go up to Washington and say, hey, we need more money, which they've actually already done. And
well, Big Daddy's been driving them a little crazy.
That's
know,
right.
So...
And also, Big Daddy says, look, we got troubles of our own. You know, you're going to have to go solve your own problems. The problem with the states is in the 1990s, like a lot of other people did, they spent like drunken sailors.
Right.
And the economy's been bad for a couple of 3 years, and they haven't collected as much revenue. They made all these commitments, and now they've got some serious problems.
Well, do you think that the states have a valid concern in complaining about federal mandates, though?
Oh, unfunded mandate.
Unfunded mandate.
No question about it. No question about it. And that you're exactly right. And if I were the states, if I were a governor, I mean, I'm not sure about the legality of this, but I'd be having attorneys looking into taking the government to court, if I had to, the federal government to court, on these unfunded mandates. No, there's no question about it.
Right.
There are a number of them, and I'd, you know, I mean, I'd be, there might have to be a revolt. We might have another civil war over these things, but no, you're right about the unfunded mandates. No question about it. Joan, stand by. Folks, we got more to come after these messages with our good friend, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
He inspires small business. We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need, but there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's with the Kiplinger Editors and senior editor over there. And folks, their website is Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. I encourage you to check it out and go there and get some of the free news and some of the free stuff that they've got there. But also, you can subscribe to their publications, which I also recommend. They've got the weekly letter, the flagship, the Kiplinger letter, which, as I told you earlier, has been out since 1923. They're coming up on their 80th anniversary, in their 80th year right now. And, Joan, you guys have got three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agricultural letter, and then you got a magazine.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
All right. And that one's been out since 1949.
Yes, but it was once called Changing Time.
Yeah, you might remember it that way. But you can subscribe there on the website and get a 30-day free trial that I worked hard to negotiate for you.
That's right.
And then, or you can make a phone call. Joan, what is that number?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
So check that out when you get a chance. Joan, let's move down just a little bit and talk about the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights. And what do we know about this?
Well, this is kind of interesting. I mean, I'm not exactly sure why they call it the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights, but it's a bill full of new taxpayer protections and just sort of tax easings for taxpayers.
Right.
For example, one that's actually not mentioned here, which I think is kind of neat, is that if you file your return electronically, you'll be given more time to file if this bill passes.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of April 15th, the deadline will be April 30th.
So electronic filers might be able to have an extension. See, I didn't know that if you file electronically, you couldn't do an extension.
Well, this isn't an extension. This is a different deadline.
Oh, a different...
You don't have to file for this.
Ah.
See, you would just automatically have your deadline be April 30th. And it's designed to occur... They want more people to file electronically
because
they don't want to have to deal with paper returns.
Exactly. This is to encourage people to use the electronics.
Right, exactly.
I see. All right.
But there's other things in there, too. For example, if the IRS owes you a refund and it's late or whatever and it pays you interest, that interest would now be tax-free. I mean, it would be kind of silly to think that you'd have to pay tax on the interest on a refund, which is really your own money.
Right, exactly.
That the IRS is sending back to you.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is just common sense.
Right. All right, that makes sense. And also, here's another thing that's interesting, Joan, that Kiplinger reports this week, and that's that there's going to be a continuation of the fast-track tax mediation for small businesses. Say that three times real fast.
Right.
That it's here to stay, and that's good news. And you guys report that it cuts the settlement time. If you have a dispute with the IRS in your small business, it could cut the settlement time way down, Joan.
Right. This was a pilot program, and these things used to drag on for months.
Or years.
But they found that, and I guess people might be skeptical when they hear me say this, but they bring IRS appeals officers in to act as neutral parties, and I guess they really do, because the settlement time has been cut from to about 40 days, which is just over a month.
These guys aren't named Guido or anything like that, are they?
No comment.
Let me see if I got this straight now. An IRS agent is the neutral party.
I know.
I'm having a little trouble processing that information.
You're just going to have to trust me on this.
I'm having trouble processing that information there, folks. Okay, let's move down and talk about genetic discrimination, I should say, Joan. What is genetic discrimination?
Well, for example, a couple of examples pop into my mind in terms of diseases. You could envision a situation where if you knew someone was going to develop a genetic disease that they have a genetic predisposition
to. Like 7 out of 10 of their family members have diabetes or something like
right.
that.
Right. Then you might not want to hire them because of the strain on your insurance
right.
program if you did.
So, yeah. Okay. But what's happening is Congress is banning that right now.
Well,
right.
they will get to the point where they will ban it. And this is one of those issues where we've been writing about it, but I don't think the average person knows that it's an issue, and it really isn't yet. but it's kind of looking down the road to where it will be much easier to predict who is going to, I guess, suffer from something that might be inherited.
Right, right. Well, and I'm not sure, I mean, as an employer, Joan, for a number of years, I've never looked in anybody's background enough to know anything about like about that. I mean, maybe companies do, but I don't know anybody who does that.
Right.
So, but it's probably a good thing that they're banning it. I mean, I can see that that's kind of an invasion of privacy and as well as discrimination. 22, quick break, right back after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we got Beverly Emanibo, who is going to be joining us to talk to us about how to communicate better. Fred Siegel is going to help us with our investments, and Tim Berry is going to help us with our business planning. That's coming up in the show straight ahead. Joan Pride is our guest. She's with the Kiplinger Editors, Kiplinger.com. Joan, is Congress going to be able to take, are the Democrats going to be able to take back Congress in 2004? What's Kiplinger say about this?
Well, I'm sure you'll be thrilled about this, Jim. The odds are against it.
Say it ain't so.
Oh, please.
Well, why?
Oh, well, gosh. You know, it's kind of a momentum thing. Because as we point out here,
it has nothing to do with one party being having the better ideas or anything like that, right?
Well, if it did, then the Democrats would be in control.
Oh, okay.
In any case, you just left that wide open, Jim.
I set them up and you take them.
Right. Well, for one, as we point out, there are fewer Republican incumbents retiring, and it's so much easier to defend a seat normally when you have an incumbent running than when it's open.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been a lot of redistricting going on in Texas and elsewhere.
Gerrymandering.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to make a big difference.
Well, and you know, those darn Republicans, you know, they're bad. They're really, really pretty bad about doing that gerrymandering, and of course the Democrats would never do that.
Well, not as often as the Republicans do it.
Never.
They do it every time you turn around.
Those mean old Republicans.
Yep, that's right.
Is that going to be a problem? Is this going to be a problem for the Democrats?
What, redistricting?
Well, not getting Congress back.
You know what? Oh, sure. Well, I think their biggest problem is that they don't have this ability to vacuum up campaign funds the way the Republicans do. I don't know why, but they don't.
And I still can't get over the fact that they pushed campaign finance reform, Joe. That still blows me away.
Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. Well,
oh,
you know,
boy.
I think they thought they could run on that.
Yeah.
And nobody cares. I think people are pretty cynical about that.
Yeah. Folks, this was kind of like a team that only has a baseball team that only has aluminum bats. No wooden bats, only aluminum bats, trying to get the league to ban aluminum bats. I mean, this campaign finance reform, I mean, they took away the one area that they were the strongest at.
Right.
And,
well, I don't know. I mean, Clinton was a good fundraiser, but now he's, you know, sort of out of the picture.
Yeah.
The new president's quite a good fundraiser.
Much to his chagrin, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about, technology. Let's get over to the
yes.
technology part on page 3. You guys say that there are three new gee-whiz technologies out there. I love the way you use
that
term.
Boy, can we turn a phrase.
That's right. What are they?
This is sort of amazing. An ink that conducts electrical signals?
Hmm.
I mean,
smart,
think about
smart
that.
Products. You and I have been talking about smart products for a long time. We've been predicting this, haven't we?
Right. So what do you need, you know, dial switches and buttons for?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't need them anymore.
Mm-hmm. So how would it be used? It's going to be in toys this year, you say?
Right. You can write something on the fabric, and if that ink conducts electronic signals, then you can just touch that to make the toy work.
Ah, sort of like the clapper thing, right?
There you go.
Okay, and then we got an electronic display system that uses a new kind of colored ink.
Ink in quotation marks.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, we're calling them vibrant colored images, and they're on the screen, and they sort of pave the way for new kinds of signs. And I think the important thing here is that they can be changed very quickly and easily.
Oh, Okay. I'm not sure how that's going to benefit me, but we'll see. What about...
Well, if you were a retailer and wanted to change prices a lot, it would.
Oh, yeah. I guess I can see that. And what about a new way of manufacturing electronic devices?
Well, you know, I've read this, and it's sort of amazing. I can barely understand it. You think of how something is manufactured in a factory. We're saying, we're calling these things printers, in quotes, depositing layers of polymers, and that builds them into 3D shapes, and then the circuitry is right in there, that you don't need the assembly line.
Wow. That's
interesting. I guess it's sort of like machines building
machines. We'll have to come back and give you another report on these things, folks.
Right.
Another thing, though, you guys talk about is high-tech car features will become commonplace, like driving directions down on windshield, showing on windshields, like the heads-up displays of an aircraft.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to work, because you kind of need the windshield to see the road, but...
the heads-up display... No, it's just like a hologram almost, I guess. But you know, in the jet fighters, they have the heads up display, so the guys can see the information while they're looking out the windshield.
So that won't disturb their view of the road.
Exactly, it sounds like to me a heads up display kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and of course we've already you also say that we're going to have computer like dashboards, but we kind of already have that, don't we?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there would be no knobs. Well, it would be the
completely computerized with no knobs or buttons or anything.
Right. It would just be a flat panel.
Thinner car seats. How's that going to help us?
More leg room that way.
And less
that's
weight,
important.
Too, I guess. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Right. Less
lighter
weight.
Car.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, I guess. Power windows that will stop automatically if a child's finger, like the garage doors that stop.
Right,
so
or the subway doors, right.
If their head or their finger get in the thing, it doesn't hurt them.
So they must sense that. Or even, I guess elevator doors have had that technology for years. Mm-hmm. You stick your hand in there.
Joan, one more quick thing here before we leave technology. At the bottom there on page 3, Boost for International Businesses, the translation software business, which is going to help a lot.
That's very interesting. Translation software for cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be very helpful when you're using your cell phone.
This is something that's going to help people do business across languages.
Right.
So look for the translation software, folks. These are all things in your future. And only from Kiplinger do you get this stuff. 10 till. We'll be right back with Joan Pride.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure. And whatever comes our way.
That the rest of the year is going to be kind of okay, but that 2004, barring something that we don't know about, 2004 is going to be when maybe things will really start picking up.
Of course, that's what everybody said in 2002 about 2003.
You're right.
But I don't want to be a pessimist.
That's an excellent point. I think it's worthy of note. But there are some things that are in place, Joan, today that weren't in place then.
Like?
Well, the dollar was still strong, which was hurting our exports.
True.
Interest rates were up a little bit, although we're still pretty darn low. Companies are now posting profits that people think they can believe.
Well, that's important.
Yeah, exactly. Some other people, look at the stock market. Look where the stock market is. It's above 9,000. It's pretty much staying above 9,000 these
right.
days.
Right, yeah, no, it's
the
it's
Dow,
a
I should say.
Phone. And, you know, people need to remember when they see these unemployment reports, as important as they are, the unemployment figures are considered a lagging economic indicator.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So so if people are wondering, well, how come the stock market's going up and unemployment is still up? Well, that's why. The stock market is always considered a leading indicator.
And, Joan, there are three things that are going on in the employment situation that's exacerbating this. Number one, the economy's off. That's got people laid off.
Right.
Number two, technology is at a point right now. It's reached a critical mass point where people aren't needing as many people to do certain jobs as they used to.
Well, that's true.
I probably mentioned to you that I met a guy who runs a brand new Greenfield paper company, and he has 400 employees. Every single one of them, every one of the 400 employees uses technology of some kind in their job, and he said 10 years ago that plant would have taken 800 people.
Wow.
So that's technology for
huge.
You. Which is good. It's a good thing.
It's true.
But it's not good for the unemployed. And the third thing is, Joan, we've got a lot of displaced people who used to work for industries that are no longer found in America.
Oh,
textile, for example.
Oh, that's huge.
So it's going to take longer to get back to under 5% unemployment, I should say, Joan. It's going to take longer to get that done than it has in a long, long time.
Yes.
For those reasons. But I do believe when that happens, when those people get employed, I really believe we're in for a long-term economic period of growth like we had before this last recession.
Well, boy, I sure hope you're right.
I always say, Joan? From my mouth to God's ears?
That's right, right.
okay, let's talk about Canada just for a minute. You guys say that we should find improved selling opportunities in Canada. Why?
Well, it's the whole dollar thing.
Yeah.
The Canadian dollar is rising against our dollar, mm-hmm. and Canadian businesses are actually doing a bunch of spending that American businesses are not doing.
Mm-hmm. So take advantage of that, folks. When you, Joan's got the news there for you on Canada, but of course that makes the Canadian companies unhappy. Joan, let's move down. We've got about a minute, and Mr. Bush is in Africa. What's
right.
he doing over there?
And well, as you know, he's been promising aid to countries in Africa, but not troops. And, of course, there's a lot of instability in the region, and he's got to kind of walk a fine line here.
Boy, that's a landmine. That's a minefield I don't think we want to get into,
right.
Joan, with our troops.
Right. They're in enough places right now.
Mogadishu, was the last little memory of that. And
that was
I'll
bad.
Tell you, that's a nightmare over there, a lot of those things that are going on over there, that I think we definitely need to be helping them. But I just don't see us putting troops over there. That makes no sense to me.
I think you're right.
It's as you said, I think you called it a quagmire. That's the truth. But he's trying to help, and he's trying to help with AIDS too, isn't he? He's trying to help them with their AIDS problem, and good for him for that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, hey, Joan, good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and we're looking forward to next week already.
That sounds great. I'll be back.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes. Small business owners, and each and every single member of our military standing a post around the world, putting yourselves in harm's way on our behalf. Don't ever forget this, ladies and gentlemen in the military. You're our heroes. God bless you. God be with you. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.